I then told him of the greatness of the soul, and its wonderful capacity for growth and expansion and love. He listened to me intently, and said, "What you say may be true and I will investigate, but I am sure that there must be some mistake as to its superiority over the mind, but as you are an honorable and intelligent spirit I will consider the question in all seriousness, and if I find that there is any probability of such power existing as you describe, I will let my mind acknowledge it and will seek to obtain the means of attaining to this power. I am, as you see, a very reasonable man and susceptible to conviction when the evidence to prove your assertions are reasonably certain." I told him to think the matter over and come again and discuss the question with me. He said he would, but I am afraid that he is hopelessly bound up with the idea that he knows everything, and outside of his mind there is nothing in all God's universe. Such spirits are the most to be pitied, because to them repentance will never come, or if it does, it is a long way ahead of them. 101. I must confess that I rather enjoyed the interview, because it recalled somewhat some of the old times when on earth I engaged in arguments and debates. But, of course, it had a deeper and holier meaning than that, because I hoped that he might come to the light of God's great provisions for the spiritual awakening, and learn the way to the Father's love. So, I must say that I am indebted to you for bringing me in contact with such a spirit. I know how apparently hopeless the task is of convincing him that his great mind can be surpassed by any other thing, but I pray that something I may say may help a little light to enter into that hidebound and all-sufficient mind of his. I intended to write about another subject tonight, but as I thought you would be interested in knowing the result of our interview, I concluded to tell you rather than write on the other subject. So I will not write more, as there are other spirits waiting to write. So, my dear boy and partner, I am your loving friend and brother, as ever, Albert G. Riddle. April 7, 1915. I am here, Jesus. Well, you have my love and help, and you must realize that I am with you very much, as I am. I wish to tell you that you are not in such a good condition tonight for much writing, as your nervous forces are not exactly suitable for the strain which writing imposes upon you. I know that you do not understand just what this means, but I know, and tell you, so that you may not write very much. I do not think that in permitting the unfortunate to write as you have determined that they may write, will injure your rapport with your band or with me. You are doing them much good, and the influence that you seem to have with these unfortunate spirits is surprising, and to many other spirits seems a very remarkable thing. I know just what your kindness and desire to help means, and that you not only benefit them who come to you and are happy, but also benefit many who are not able to write, for these latter see that you have helped the former, and they naturally make inquiries as to what you said to them, and what course you advised them to pursue. And as a consequence of what they hear, they seek the help of other spirits. There are great hosts of these unhappy spirits who come to you or gather around when you are writing. Of course, they cannot all write, and yet, the Paget Messages 1915, they who do not write are just as anxious to get relief from the condition of darkness in which they are, as of the others, and naturally try to learn the way out. Many of these spirits, after learning and seeing what benefit the few whom you advise have derived, of their own volition turn to the brighter spirits and ask advice. They seem to think that these brighter spirits may be somewhat interested in them, and, consequently, they seek their help. You are doing a good work and must not stop, for if you do, you will cause many spirits to remain in darkness for a much longer time than they otherwise would. I want to tell you that I am anxious to continue my messages, and so have been very free from them, and your band should save you from being bothered by them. Your Indian guide is strong enough to keep them away, and he will do so, I have no doubt. Your band also is strong enough to keep away the strongest of these evil spirits, and they will do so. Yes, so far you have, and I have been very much pleased that you have. You certainly have a way that overcomes these evil spirits and turns them to higher things, and causes them to listen to the bright spirits. You must not doubt or become disheartened. I will stop now, as your wife wants to write a little. With all my love, I am, Jesus. April 9, 1915. I am here, Jesus. Yes, I am, and you will be enabled to fully understand what the Holy Ghost is, and what meaning should be given to it as you find it referred to in various parts of the Bible. I will say this though, that it is not God nor any part of Him. It is merely one of His instrumentalities, used by Him in doing His work for the redemption of mankind. I will not write any message tonight, but will commence next week, if you are in better condition. Well, as you believe what I say as to my being a son of God, and not a god, you can easily believe that my coming to you as I do, is not at all contrary to any law of the spirit world. The fact that I have my home in the highest celestial heaven does not prevent me from coming to earth to do my work, which has not been carried on by those of earth who should have performed it. I am a spirit of love and sympathy, as well as of great spiritual development, and I desire that all men shall know what the great plan of the Father is for their redemption and happiness. 102. So, because I am such an exalted spirit, as you say, it is no reason that I should not come to you, and communicate with you freely and, in a way, confidentially. I love you, as I have told you, and I have selected you to do my work, and hence, I am trying to make you one wholly at one with me. You must not doubt me just because I come to you so often and speak so familiarly with you, because I hope and expect that in the great future you will be very close to me and with me. I am trying to prepare you for so great a progression in your spiritual condition, that when you come over, you will realize the oneness that I speak of, and be fitted to live near my sphere. Well, your grandmother is a wonderful spirit in her development, and by the time you come over she will be near me, in my home, and, as I believe, will your mother and wife. They are all filled with the Father's love and are receiving it more abundantly all the time. They are now in the first, celestial, sphere of my kingdom, and will find that their progress will be much more rapid. So try to believe what I say, and do my will, and all will be well with you. Well, soon you will be free, as I told you, and then you can do the work without being interfered with by material things. I know that it is hard for you to lay aside these cares, and I am not disappointed or impatient that you do not, but only believe that the time will soon come when they will trouble you no more. So as we have written somewhat long tonight, I will stop now. I will pray for you as I always do, with all my love and the blessings of the Father. I am your loving brother, Jesus. April 12, 1915. I am here, Jesus. I want to tell you that you are now getting in a better spiritual condition than you have been for a long time. You have more of God's love in your heart, and I think that very soon you will be in that condition of mind and soul development that will enable you to take my messages and as I desire that they be received. I am with you very much and try to help you in your efforts to obtain this soul development, and also in your material matters. So do not doubt me, as what I tell you is true. If you will only give more time to prayer, you will find that your condition of happiness will be much improved and that you will realize that the Father's love is coming into your soul more abundantly. The Paget Messages 1915. So, let me feel that you are endeavoring to get this great love more and more every day, and I will try to help you with all my powers and love. I will not write more tonight as there are some others here who desire to write. So good night. With all my love and the blessings of the Father, I am your own true brother, Jesus. I am here, Helen. It was the Master. I want to tell you of my love for you, as I promised. Well, because I have not lately said very much about my love, and have let others write a great deal, you must not think that I do not love you as much as formerly, for I love you a great deal more as I told you a few nights ago. As my love for the Father increases and I receive more of His love in my heart, the more and deeper love I have for you, and I can only try to tell it to you. I am not able to find words sufficient to do so, for words cannot convey to you my feelings of love and happiness. Oh, Ned, I never thought when on earth that there could exist such love as I have for you now, and I never thought that I could love you as I do now, developed soul, and feel that I am yours for all eternity. No one can understand what this love means, who has not received it in his heart, and no one can know the happiness that it brings when once such love becomes a part of him, until he has actually experienced it. I am waiting patiently, I hope, for the time to come when you will be with me and share my home and joys. I am now in such a state of happiness that nothing that can possibly happen can in any way take from one that happiness or diminish my love for you. I sympathize with you in all your troubles, but I know that they are only for a season and that in a very short time, comparatively speaking, they will pass away and you will be free to turn all your thoughts to me, and love me as your own, and only true soulmate. I will not attempt to tell you what it will all mean to you and to me, but I assure you that in your moments when my love overshadows and fills your soul, as it does at times, you catch only a faint glimpse of what is here waiting for you. So, do not let yourself worry or doubt that I love you with a love greater than you can possibly imagine can exist. Well, sweetheart, I must stop now as another wishes to write some. Asked if Mr. M. has a guardian angel and soulmate. Yes, he has both. His guardian angel is his mother, who is a very happy and beautiful spirit, filled with the love of God, and who watches over him with such tenderness and love. She is now trying to influence him to give his thoughts to higher things and to let doubts of the future and the possibilities awaiting him flee from him. She certainly does love her boy, and if he only knew what hours and days she spends with him overshadowing him with her love and beautiful thoughts, he would thank God for such a mother. I do not believe that she will ever cease praying until he fully realizes the great truth that a man never dies, and that when he passes from the earth life to the spirit life, she will be waiting for him, ready to take him into her arms and loving care as she did when he was a very small boy. She says that he never knew very much of her mother's love and protection, and that for that very reason she has for so long a time been so anxious for the time to come, when he will know and realize that he has a mother with so much love for him, that he will wonder how she can love him so much. She is with him and tries to make him feel her presence and sometimes she succeeds, and he feels very happy, but does not know the cause. She is trying to help him see that there is something more of life than this mere earthly existence, and that when the time comes for him to leave his mortal body, there is another body which will show itself to him, and which will live forever, in a world where, if he will only make the effort to find, he will find happiness and love beyond his conception. Tell him that his mother is closer to him now than she possibly could have been had she remained immortal, because she knows all his troubles and times of loneliness and aspiration for better and higher things. She will come sometime and write him a letter and tell him of her great love for him. She says, "Bless my boy and keep him in ways of happiness and truth, a father of love." Well, as to his soulmate, I have not thought of finding her, but I will do so and let you know. I am your own true and loving, Helen. I am here, your old professor. I am very happy and am glad to say that I can see that you are, too. I want to say that I am prepared now to write you as I promised, and any time that suits you I will be 103, the Paget Messages 1915, glad to do so. Well, that will suit me very well, and I will be here, and ready to give you the result of my best thoughts, and hope that you will find my writings interesting and profitable. Yes, she is happy and is here. She says that you are very dear to her, and wants you to know that you are doing a great good to the poor unfortunate spirits who come to you for help. She is willing to help too, if you desire her to. Yes, says Mrs. Salyards, that will be perfectly proper, and she will not hesitate to respond and do what she can. So she says, with all her love, she wishes you much happiness and success. Well, I tried to help them, and some of them listened to me and tried to take my advice, and are now striving to obtain the Father's forgiveness and love. Some were not so easily impressed, but I believe that they will ultimately try to do as I advise them. Oh, it is a great and good work that you are doing, and we are helping you to do. Yes, I heard the conversation between him and Mr. Riddle, and I enjoyed it very much. It was quite a revelation to me, as I could hardly conceive that a spirit, with all the surroundings that exist here, could be so self-opinionated, or believe that he had such an all-comprehensive mind. It was certainly interesting as I heard him discourse on the wonderful knowledge which he possessed, or thought he possessed. Such minds, I doubt not, are very difficult to convince that there may be some little knowledge that they do not possess. I will not write more now, but it will say good night. With all my love and best wishes for your happiness, I am your old professor, Joseph H. Salyards. April 13, 1915. I am here, Professor Salyards. Well, I am here as I agreed, and will endeavor to write you my thoughts on the subject. What may spirits know about the laws of the spirit world after they have been in that world for a short time? As you know, I have been here for a comparatively short time, and while my studies have been to a considerable extent in the study of these laws, yet, I find that I have limited knowledge of the same, and much of my information has been gathered from other spirits who have lived here a great many years, and who have devoted their study and investigation to these laws. Well, I want first to say that no spirit, by the mere fact of having shortly before made his advent to this world, has received any much greater knowledge than he had when on earth. My knowledge of spiritual laws when on earth was not very extensive, and I found, when I came into the spirit world, that I did not know much more than I did before I came, and such is the experience of every spirit. But, as I continued to investigate these matters, I discovered that my capacity for learning was greatly increased and that my mind was more plastic and received this knowledge more easily than when I was a mortal. This is largely due to the fact that the brain, I mean the mortal brain, is, when compared to what you might call the spirit brain, a thing of much inferior quality, and not so capable of learning the cause and effect of phenomena. I'm now undergoing a course of study that will, I have no doubt, give me wonderful information of these laws, so that ultimately I may become what you mortals might call a learned man. The first and, to me, the most important law that I have learned is that man continues to live in the spirit world without his earthly body. This great law, while to you and to many others is well known and is an established fact, yet, to me, was not known, as I had never had any experience in spiritualism and had never given any study to the subject. When I arrived in the spirit world, I learned that this law is one of God's truths, and that it is fixed and will never change, for all will survive the change of so-called death. The next great law that I learned is, that no man can of his own power make his condition or position in the spirit world just what and where he would have it be. This is another fixed truth, and one, which many spirits even, do not fully comprehend, for they think, or so express themselves, that all they have to do is to exercise a little will power and they can move from certain conditions. But this is not true, for the law controlling this matter never has any exceptions in its operations. Man or spirit can, in a way, determine what his destiny may be, but when once fixed by this great power of will which God has conferred on man, he cannot by the exercise of that will change that fixed condition until the laws of compensation have been satisfied. And even then the change is not brought about by the exercise of his will, but by the operation of the laws releasing him from memories and recollections which hold him to the conditions that his life has placed him in. So when men think that they, by the exercise of their own will, can 104, the Paget Messages 1915, release themselves from a condition which they have made for themselves, they are mistaken. Many spirits here have this idea, and believe that if they only chose to exercise their vaunted will power, they could relieve themselves of their darkened condition and get into happier conditions. But strange, they never try this and the reason therefore is apparent. They could not if they tried, and will not try because they cannot. And yet they think that when they get ready, they will only have to exercise this will and the change will follow. No, this law is as fixed as any law of this great universe of God. Of course, while man or spirit cannot by the exercise of his will change his condition, yet, in order to secure that change, there will has to be exercised, because the help which comes from without, and which is absolutely necessary to man, and which causes the change, and will not come unless man exercises the will in the way of desiring, and asking for it. So let not man think that he is his own savior, because he is not, and if the help did not come from without, he would never be saved from the condition which he finds himself in, when he enters the spirit world. You hear in your spirit circles and read in the publications about spiritualism that progression is a law of the spirit world. Well, that is true, but it does not mean that a spirit by the mere fact of being in the spirit world necessarily progresses, either mentally or spiritually, for this is not true. Many spirits who have been here for years are in no better condition than when they first became spirits. All progression depends upon the help that comes from outside the mind or soul of man. Of course, when this help comes, man has to cooperate, but without this help there would be nothing with which to cooperate, and no progress could possibly be made. Many of the spiritualists make this great mistake when they speak or write on this subject. But let them know that if a man depends upon his own powers exclusively, he will never progress. And this law does not apply only to the soul's progress, of which you have heard us speak so often, but to the progress of the mere mind, and also to what might be called the purely moral qualities. My observation, and my information from the other spirits that I have mentioned, confirms the truth of what I have said. Man, of himself, cannot elevate himself either mentally or morally, and the sooner he learns that fact, the better for him. Another law of the spirit world is that when a spirit once commences to progress, that progress increases in geometrical progression, as we used to say when teaching on earth. Just as soon as the light breaks into a man's soul or mind, and he commences to see that there is a way for him to reach higher things, and make greater expansion of either his mind or soul, he will find that his desire to progress will increase as that progression continues, and with that desire will come help in such abundance that it will be limited only by the desire of the spirit. His will then becomes a great force in his success in progressing and working in conjunction with the help that calls it into operation. It becomes a wonderful thing of power and irresistible force. This progression may be illustrated by the history of the snowball, which started rolling from the top of a hill. As it continues its descent, not only does its velocity increase, but it continually enlarges its form and body by the outside snow attaching itself to the ball. So with the mind or soul of a spirit, as it ascends, it not only becomes more rapid in its flight, but it meets this outside help that I speak of, which help attaches itself to the spirit, and, as it were, becomes a part of it. So you see that the great problem is to make the start, and this principle will apply to mortals as well as to spirits, because, if the start be made on earth, the mere fact of becoming a spirit will not halt or in any way interfere with the progress of the soul of that spirit. Of course, this means that a correct start be made. If the start be a false one or based on things other than the truth, instead of progress continuing when a man becomes a spirit, there may have to be a retracing of the way, and a new start made, in order to get on the right road. And this applies to the progress of the mind as well as to the progress of the soul. The mind of a mortal learns many things which seem to that mind to be the truth, and which, in its opinion, must lead to progress and greater knowledge. But when the earth life gives place to the spirit life, that mind may find that its basis of knowledge was all wrong, and that to continue in the way that it had been moving would lead to increased error, and consequently, a new start must be made. And frequently, the retracing of that mind over the course that it had followed, and the elimination of errors that it had embraced, is more difficult and takes a longer time to accomplish, than the learning of the truth does after the mind makes its correct start. 105, The Paget Messages 1915. So sometimes the mind of great learning, according to the standards of earthly learning, is more harmful, and retards more the progress of that man in the ways and acquirements of truth, than does the mind that is, as you might say, a blank, that is, without preconceived ideas of what the truth is on a particular subject. This unfortunate experience exists to a greater extent in matters pertaining to religion than to any other matters, because the ideas and convictions which are taught and possessed of these religious matters affect innumerably more mortals than do ideas and convictions in reference to any other matters. A spirit who is filled with these erroneous beliefs, that may have been taught him from his mortal childhood, and fostered and fed upon by him until he becomes a spirit, is, of all the inhabitants of this world, the most difficult to teach and convince of the truths pertaining to religious matters. It is much easier to teach the agnostic, or even the infidel, of these truths, than the hidebound believer in the dogmas and creeds of the Church. So, I say, let the minds of mortals be open to the teachings of the truth, and even if they are convinced that what they believe is the truth, Yet let not that belief stand in the way of them being able to see the truth, when it actually is presented to them. Another law is that not all who know that life in the spirit world is continuous are certain that continuous life means immortality. I mean by this, that the mere fact of living as a spirit does not of itself prove that such spirit is immortal. This is a subject that spirits discuss as much as do mortals, and it is just as much a question of uncertainty, as is the immortality of the soul as taught among mortals, now and for all ages past. While men know that the death of the body does not mean the death of the spirit, and that such spirit, which is the real man, continues to live with all its qualities of a spiritual nature, yet there has never been any proof presented to man that that spirit will live for all eternity, or, in other words, that it is immortal. I say this, because I have read the histories and beliefs of most of the civilized, and some not called civilized, nations of the world. And I was not able to find in all my readings that it was ever demonstrated that man is immortal. Of course, many pagan and sacred writers taught this, but their statements were all based on belief and nothing more, and, so I say, immortality has never to mortals become demonstrated as a fact. In the spirit world, the spirits of not only the lower spheres, but those of the higher intellectual or moral spheres, are still debating the question among themselves. I am informed that there are some who lived on earth many centuries ago, and who have become exceedingly wise and learned in the knowledge of the laws of the universe, and have become so free from the sins and errors of their earth life that they may be called perfect men, and yet they do not know that they are immortal. Many of them think that they are just such men or spirits as were they who were represented by Adam and Eve. They know not that they are any less liable to death than were the ones just mentioned. And hence immortality is a thing which may or may not exist for spirits as well as for mortals. I know that many of your spiritualist friends on earth claim that the mere fact that spiritualism has demonstrated the continuity of life, establishes the fact of immortality. But a few moments' consideration will show you the falsity of this reasoning. Change is the law eternal, both on earth and in the spirit world, and nothing exists the same for any length of time, and in the succession of these changes, how can it be said that in the future, far or near, changes may not come by which the existence of the spirit, the ego of man, may be ended, and that ego takes some other form or enter into some other condition, so that it will not be the same ego, and not the same spirit which is now living as a demonstration of the continuity of life. And so, many spirits, as well as mortals, do not know what is necessary to obtain, to have the certain knowledge of immortality. But many other spirits know that there is an immortality for spirits who choose to seek that immortality in the way that God in His great wisdom and providence has provided. I will not discuss this phase of immortality now, but will at some later time. There is another law, which enables spirits to become, by the mere operation of their natural affections and loves, pure and free from the consequences and evils of their mortal lives, and again become perfect, like the first parents before the fall. This does not mean that the law of compensation does not operate to the fullest, and that it does not demand the last farthing, because such is the exactness in the operation of this law. 106, the Paget Messages 1915, that no spirit is released from its penalties, until he has satisfied the law. As you believe, and as many other mortals believe, a man's punishment for the sins committed by him on earth are inflicted by his conscience and memories. There is no special punishment inflicted by God on any particular man, but the law of punishment operates alike on every man. If the facts that bring that punishment into operation are the same, that punishment will be the same, no matter whether the object of its infliction be the same or different persons. So you see, it cannot be escaped, on any ground of special dispensation, so long as the facts which call for its operation exist, and the conscience and memories of the spirit realize these facts. When a spirit first enters the spirit life, it does not necessarily feel the scourging of these memories. And this is the reason why you will so often hear the spirit, who has so recently left his mortal life, assure his friends or sorrowing relatives at the public seances that he is very happy, and wouldn't be again in the earth life, and similar assurances. But after a little while, memory commences to work, as the soul is awakened, and then never ceases until the penalties are paid. I don't mean that the spirit is, necessarily, continuously in a condition of torment, but substantially that, and relief does not come until these memories cease their awful lashings.